Log Talk Radio.
Desperate House Witches. Dorian Wallace has the night off. So, before we get into first Friday of the month, I got to do a little business. For those who are new to listening to our show, thank you so much. Our listenership has actually gone up by over 1,000 people since the end of July, and we love all of y'all. Thanks for being there. We're happy to have you. But if this is your first time listening, couple of things you need to know. First thing is, Desperate House Witches is not a G, PG, or even an R-rated show. So if dirty talk, bad language, bodily functions, any of those things might upset you, this may not be the show for you, because you don't know what I'm going to say, and neither do I. And, of course, as always, Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible, the amazingly wicked one herself, Dorothy Morrison, WickedWitchStudios.com. She has all of your fabulous witchy needs. She has poppets. She has candles. She has incense. She has sprays. She has potions. She has everything. So if you're in need, hop on over to www.WickedWitchStudios.com. And if you need it shipped internationally, check out www.theangrycauldron.com. They handle that for her. All right, so it is the first Friday of the month. It is the new season. And with me, as always, for the politics wrap-up for the week, is the one, the only, the incredible pagan pundit himself, Towson Govanin. Woo!
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going out there, everybody? Is everybody awake yet? Has everybody woken up yet? It's safe to wake up now. It's impeachment season, so yay.
Yes. My favorite season after, you know, Halloween. But that's okay. So, Towson, before we get into all of that, what have you been up to while we've been on break? Tell us a little bit of what's going on with you.
A bloody hell of a lot. I am putting my nose down to finish the first draft of my new novel. I am in the last quarter of it, and then I will be doing a second draft and then sending it off to beta readers. So I am hoping to have this out in time for the holidays. And the nice thing is that once I'm done on my end, the rest of it goes fairly quickly because I am in the fortunate position of being able to pay people to do this stuff for me professionally now. So editing, cover art, you know, when you pay people, they tend to turn things around for you fairly quickly. So it's independent artists supporting other independent artists. And I've really been focusing on that. Of course, also we've had a little bit of chaos because the same came into an inheritance recently, and not only did I put money aside to finish my book, but my wife and I, our family, fulfilled one of our longstanding fantasies and bought ourselves a camper. It is a travel trailer. It is, yes.
Yay.
Yes. And we have it. We have it. We have it in a storage facility right now because our driveway is a little hard to get in and out of with it because of the way the hills are around here, but we have it. Next year at Starwood, we are going to have, this thing is so cush. It's not even going to feel like camping. It's like we got a queen size bed. Okay. I mean, we've got LED lighting. It's just, you know, it's again, it's one of those things where it's like we come into some money. It's like we were not planning on this. We've already budgeted out for the year. Let's just go ahead and do this. And we're planning on hitting the road late spring, early summer, for a 2-month trip across the country to promote my new novel series. The first one is called The Sorceress. That's the one I'm working on right now. And it's the first in a 7-part book series that I am launching that is straight up urban fantasy. Now, there are pagans in it. One of my lead character's best friends is a Wiccan named Raina, and there are real rituals in there. I model some of the rituals that the folks do in the new novel on real ADF style druidry. So that's a lot of fun. And, it's a big old, it's the beginning of a great big extended urban fantasy universe with all kinds of creatures and beasties, as well as real witches and druids. And my characters go into a fairy realm. There's all kinds of fun stuff in this. So I'm really looking forward to getting it out for everybody. And that's really what I'm doing right now. As a matter of fact, my wife and my daughter are heading south right now to Wisteria to go to the Autumn Fires Festival for the weekend. I am staying home and I'm going to spend like 10 hours tomorrow just writing straight, seeing how far I can get on this. It's very fun. I've just recently made contact with somebody who has done editing work for Stephanie Meyer and Anne Rice. He has offered his services for my novel. I was very excited about that. And I'm currently looking for artists. I want to do professional. I've got a cover concept for this art. For the cover art, if anybody out there is a professional level graphic artist and you want to submit some stuff for me to consider, who's going to get the gig for this, you can go ahead and message me directly. We can go ahead and put up my public page, my author page. You can message me through there, and we'll go ahead and put that out on the Desperate House Witches Facebook page after the show here, just to remind people. And if you haven't liked the page yet, go ahead and like it, because this is the page that you want to like if you like my sense of humor and you want to find out what's going on with witchy stuff and pagany stuff and my YouTube channel and my writing. There's really not any political stuff on there. So if you're really just interested in my art, that is definitely where you want to interact with me on. I've relaunched a YouTube channel in the last couple of months. So Mote It Be now has 9 videos on it. It had 3 for about a year. Then I went back there and found out that people were actually watching them, so I decided I should start making them again. And so there's a million things going at once. I'm not only helping to start a new ADF Grove in the Akron Kent area, but my wife and I are going to start hosting open Wiccan circles at our house for our friends. So, what the hell? I had so many oodles of free time anyway.
And I can sleep in the camper when I come visit, right?
Oh, totally, totally. Oh, God, yeah.
Right on.
These campers are so cush now. I mean, you can actually run the TV off of the 12-volt system in there, so we don't have to be hooked up to even, to have the digital TV in there. And the kids' bunk beds are, like, bigger than their beds at home. It's just ridiculous. They're making these things to be, like, rolling houses. So, yeah.
Oh, that's plush. I love the idea of a camper. I do. I just don't know what I would do with it in the off time when I'm not using it. Because it's expensive to keep them, you have to keep them a certain temperature, and they've got to be looked at. You got to make sure, it's the battery is checked and all that groovy stuff. But, no, more power to you. Congratulations. Maybe we'll get to see you more often now.
Well, there's been a lot of festivals that people have been trying to get me to do, and now with this, it's going to be a lot easier, especially if I can start, making enough through the books. And I'm also going to be opening an eBay store to handle all book-related merch, as well as things like my new Shrine in a Box that I'm developing right now. That's going to be a new kit that I'll be offering through there. And if we can do that enough that my wife can take more time off work, or maybe even just work for the family business, then we're just going to hit all of these damn festivals that people have been trying to get us to for all of these years. I mean, there's a big ADS festival in the same state down in southwestern Ohio called Summerlands. And
yeah,
we've never been. We've never been to that, you know. And so, and of course, people keep saying, oh, you got to come to Mystic South. And yeah, yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, we'll just have to start chaining them together. We're just gonna have to do Mystic South and Starwood right in a row because they're usually like just right next to each other on the schedule, and you know, we'll just
it's
like
very true. Yeah,
we'll swap out. You know. Party circles. It's like, I'll show you all the places to party at Starwood. You show me where to party at Mystic South. So
there you go. Absolutely. Mystic South is very cush, though. I got to tell you, we're in a hotel. It's very, very nice. It's a real convention situation. It's kind of like the Southern Pantheacon. So we kind of like it. It's groovy. It's not camping because, you know, my old ass can't get up off the floor anymore. My old bones are not letting it happen. So, yeah,
Yeah.
I need a bed. Hello. I need a bed. Just saying.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, last
anyway.
Few years at Starwood, I've been camping in the back of my van. I've been making a mattress in the back of my van because, like hell, I'm going to climb in and out of the tent anymore. Okay. So,
just saying. You're at a certain age, and it's like, you know, I'm not young enough to live on the floor anymore. That's it. You know, I'm done.
Precisely.
I'm done. I can't fuck on the floor anymore. Do you know what happens when two old people try to fuck on a fucking forest floor? Are you serious?
Exactly.
Two old pagans trying to have sex on the forest floor? Come on now. My back hurts. His back hurts. He's leaning on my hair. I'm screaming for mercy. His shoulder goes up. No, baby. No. No, we need
to. And you don't want to see. And you don't want to see my back if I try to sleep on a goddamned air mattress. Then my back is at war with me for the rest of the day. So yeah.
The trip. Yeah. Yeah, I can't do
no.
it. But all right. So. Let's move on. We've got a lot to cover. Bernie Sanders literally just had a heart attack, unfortunately. He left the hospital a few hours ago, and then all of a sudden, boom, heart attack. I mean, he's not dead, but, you know, this may take him. I think this is going to take him out, don't you? What's the status
here? I'll tell you, even if he refuses to drop out, the thing is that, and I don't think he'll lose any of his true believers, because they're gonna say, well, you know, lots of people bounce back. I mean, Eisenhower had a stroke in the fucking White House, and you know, and that kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah, but I'll tell you, you know, the thing, you know, I really don't think he's gonna get any more people, and he was already drifting to a distant third anyway between Warren and Biden, so that's not in a good position to be in. To begin with. But I really just think that, listen, you know, I've had my differences with him and with his crowd of people, but the thing is that he has inspired a whole bunch of people to get involved who might not otherwise might be. A lot of my friends who are the most hardcore Warren supporters now were Bernie supporters in 2016. He brought them in, and then Elizabeth was able to pick them up this time around. So, but I think it might just, you know, there, it might just be time for, it's like, dude, listen, take it, you know, running for anything is fucking taxing and wearing on anybody. It's like, take care of yourself, man. Be there to advise the next generation of activists who are going to want to learn from your successes and mistakes. You know, it's like, It's definitely going to kill the campaign because he's not going to pick anybody up. Nobody, you know, because nobody wants to start back a candidate that they don't know how they're going to do by the time Inauguration Day comes around. So, you know, it will take out any momentum. But the thing is that's why we're fortunate to have such a strong field. And really with some of the people who have dropped out, we've been left with some of the stronger people left in the field. And as a matter of fact, I'm taking a look at the field now, and I'm really starting to see how the next administration is going to want, you know, could very easily shake out. And this is just like, let me tell you something. Number one, Harris has dropped in the polling, but don't count her out. She has a big Iowa push. I think it's a mistake to put too many eggs in the Iowa basket, personally. But you never know.
Yeah.
If she finishes a strong second behind Warren in Iowa, that's going to upend everything. Now, of course, if now factor still New Hampshire primary is not really going to matter for much because of the fact that Elizabeth Warren is from right next door in Massachusetts. You know, New Hampshire, much of New Hampshire is serviced by the Boston media market, so they know the woman very well. It's she's going to be seen as a favorite, you know, as like a favorite son type candidate, and New Hampshire's not really going to be a factor. But then we move into the South, then we move into North Carolina, and that is, I mean, South Carolina, that's where things are really going to start getting interesting because Kamala Harris is building a strong network in the South. So again, if she can pull a decent, like a second place showing or a strong third in Iowa, it could change the calculus. But the way things are shaking out right now, I could easily see, you know, in 2021, you know, in January 2021, when the Warren administration is being, is being sworn in with her Attorney General, Kamala Harris, Director, you know, Director of HUD and the rebuilding of the U.S. cities being Pete Buttigieg, and maybe even putting, and you know what? The guy knows a lot of people. The guy is really good at, you know, at wheeling and dealing. Why not put Joe Biden in the State Department? You know, let him go out there and be the, he's like, hey, listen, you wouldn't believe that asshole we had over here before, but I'm here to tell you that we're going to be doing better now. You know, it's like, who knows? But it's really
who would be the running
though.
Mate? But who would be her running mate?
See, I don't know. There, you know, the impetus of the you know, the preference, shall we say, of the more establishment traditional path type people would say, okay, we've got a woman, we need the most white bread het cis dude possible, you know, for a running mate. So they're going to be pushing people like Eric Swalwell, or possibly, you know, maybe somebody with a good firm environmental record or something like that. There's still people pushing hardcore for an all-woman ticket, since by then whoever is, you know, residing in the White House is going to be so cut and bleeding that, you know, it's really not going to matter who's in the second spot on the Democratic ticket. So you could do a Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, or you could even see, you know, or something like that. It would definitely be somebody from a pretty safe blue state to make sure that we don't lose any Senate seats, because now the Senate's back in play. I've always said the Senate was in play. Now even the boring stuffed shirts on, you know, news TV are agreeing that the Senate's in play again. But I don't think so, because the thing is that the Republican Party is basically imploding. I mean, see what's going on here. As soon as the Democrats actually got serious about impeachment, a whole lot of the country came with them. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. And when you have Trump accused of trying to put, you know, trying to get Ukraine to help him investigate his political opponents, and then he goes down to the White House press pool and asks China to do the same goddamn thing on camera. It's really, Nancy Pelosi even said he's got to remember that it's still an impeachable offense, even if the cameras are running. It's just like, and yet, you got to wonder, does this guy think he's in The Apprentice still? Does he still think that there's somebody who's going to go into the editing room and somehow make all of this look sane and rational? Because I got to tell you, it ain't going to happen. And the
I got to stop you. Because the push to normalize has been very heavy, And I see a lot of people saying, well, maybe, you know, if he's fighting corruption, maybe it is okay to ask another country to step in. Now, you and I know that's illegal, and most normal people accept the fact that that's wrong. But there's a swath of Americans who will not only never abandon ship, but they're trying to change the minds of the normal Republicans to think, yeah, you know what, maybe it isn't so bad. That's what scares me. Those are the people that scare me.
Well, the thing is, though, the people who already think like that, I mean, these are the, you know, the fact of the matter is that 40% of Republicans polled don't think that Donald Trump asked Ukraine to investigate the Bidens, even though it was in the fucking memoranda of the call that the White House fucking put out. Okay, so even when they admit to it, there's a certain amount of his group. The thing is, those people, when you take a look at the actual amount of the population, that's that hardcore 23%. And the thing where things have gotten like normalized or de-scandalized are things where a lot of people could never really see the nuances anyway. They were part of what I call that mushy middle, that 40%, shall you say, that 30 to 40% in the middle who aren't necessarily watching the news that closely and all that. The difference this time is that with all these other things, you would have Democrats saying this is a horrible thing, but we're not going to do anything about it. And then you'd have Republicans coming out to justify it, and it just seemed like more partisan stuff. But now when the Democrats are like, no, this is impeachment level shit. I mean, this is just blatant. This is just like, this is the equivalent of somebody running down the street with a bloody knife in their hand saying, I did it, and I do it again. And that's pretty much what Trump has been doing. And the thing is that everybody's treating this differently, though. Everybody's treating this differently. And, of course, people are pointing out that, it's like when they started putting kids in cages, that wasn't the triggering point. It's when they went after some old white guy politician and his family. That was the triggering point. We can debate that all we want. Right. But the fact of the matter is that everybody now, television news, legal analysts on Fox News are saying, you know what? That's an impeachable offense. And, you know, when you've got the media saying, no, this is different, and a lot of people and the Democrats are saying this is wrong and we're going to do something about it, it's just a complete different level of stuff. And now we've got 55% supporting the impeachment inquiry. We've got a solid 47% in the latest Ipsos poll who favor conviction and removal from office. So
we're
within
a
few
percent. That's a new high. Yeah, I've been watching that. That number had been very low, and it made me really uncomfortable with where the American people stood with all of this. But as that number has increased, I'm starting to get a little bit more faith back. But as I always say to you, never underestimate a Democrat's ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It's something that we're really good at, and it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I'm freaked out by that possibility again.
Although I'll tell you, one of the things I think that Nancy Pelosi learned from Barack Obama is, I think what we're starting to see here, though, is the idea that sometimes the slow and frustrating as all fuck route winds up being the best. Like with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. When Barack Obama was trying to get Congress to overturn the law, and you'd have people saying, well, he could suspend it as commander-in-chief by order, an executive order. And yeah, he could have, but then the next person who came in could have just reversed that. And so you're not really freeing anybody because they're still living with the possibility that someday it could all get taken away from them. By forcing Congress to actually repeal it, because he also knew that if he suspended it via executive order while he's trying to get Congress to act, well, that would give some people in Congress the excuse to not act. It's like, look, nobody's being persecuted now. We can go focus on other things. So he didn't want to let off the pressure. And so he forced them. He literally forced them. no, I am not going to do this for you. You have to fucking do this if you want this to happen. And finally that worked. Well, Nancy Pelosi, slow walking impeachment, has been pissing people off. I'll admit, I've gotten frustrated too. But the fact of the matter is, by the time they pulled the trigger on impeachment, the constant drum beating of ridiculousness after ridiculousness, outrage after outrage. People are saying that we're getting numb to it. And I think it's getting to the point where when somebody hears, oh, yeah, they're going to impeach Trump, they're like, really, it took them this long, huh? I mean, that's kind of like why we're seeing these numbers turn so fast now that you've got a solid 55% supporting the Democrats opening an impeachment inquiry. That is an incredible number. They didn't have those kind of numbers during Watergate, okay? Now, also remember, though, Watergate wasn't as all that different when you think about it, because the impeachment inquiry didn't open up until after the public had been flooded with all of this outrage in the Watergate hearings that were televised.
Right.
And so after weeks and months of revelation after revelation of shadiness after shadiness, then when the Democrats opened impeachment inquiry and started a formal, special committee on impeachment, the public was more ready to go along with them because they had been the case had already kind of been laid out. Now what's going to happen here is that there's a lot of things, a lot of desperate things that are seem way far apart from each other that are all going to get to be laid out in order in plain language. I mean, personally, I really wish that the Senate Democrats would just hire Rachel Maddow to lay out for the Senate and the world exactly how all these pieces fit together, because she's so good at that. I mean, one of the things that we've got to look at here that's going back to Russia, and this is showing you just how still this is a current story, the Russian influence with Donald Trump. Because one of the things that he has been trying to get all these other countries to do is to give him information that he can use to throw doubt on the American intelligence community's conclusions that Russia substantially interfered in our election in 2016. He's trying to get other countries to help him undermine that, because if he can sufficiently create enough doubt as to that conclusion, he could justify the lifting of U.S. sanctions on Russia, which is one of Vladimir Putin's top priorities. And also leaning on the president of Ukraine, trying to get him to cut a deal with Vladimir Putin that would, again, justify Trump suggesting to the international community, okay, Ukraine and Russia aren't at war anymore. We can lift the sanctions. And that's, so he's still pursuing Putin's goals of lifting the sanctions on this country, even though he's getting ready, gearing up for a 2020 fight of his life. He is still trying to pay the bill for the 2016 election. And I'll tell you, Putin, I think, is starting to get concerned because of how aggressively Russia is trying to say that the U.S. can't release any transcripts of any calls between Trump and Putin without Russia's permission. And of course, that was even met by someone in Trump's own State Department as going, yeah, right. You have no legal standing to demand jack shit from us, Vlad. He's worried. He's worried that, I mean, there is one thing that people aren't talking a whole lot about right now, but I predict you a year from now, we are going to say, holy shit, if we knew then what we know now about this one thing, the secret server where they were dumping all of Trump's conversations with foreign leaders, the super top secret computer service. Yeah. This is there are just a handful of this level of security of computer server in the whole of the United States government. We're talking top level encryption. it's the kind of thing that, you know, if a Russian hacker could actually get into it, that person would be, you know, made a billionaire by the Russian Federation, because it just really wouldn't happen. And that is where they were storing all of these phone calls between Trump and Zelensky in the Ukraine, the president of the Ukraine, as well as a lot of other conversations that Trump has had with world leaders. See, these servers are designed to hold things like the name of our top operative in the KGB underworld, you know, like our top spies, our absolute most sensitive secrets, the next round of nuclear launch codes, that kind of thing. That's what's put on these servers. Mm-hmm. That's what's supposed to be on these servers, not conversations that you don't want people stumbling across. And in Watergate, we had the White House tapes, and the Democrats wanting all these tapes, Nixon fighting all these tapes. Eventually, once the tapes had to be handed over, they found the smoking gun tape, and that led to the resignation, yada, yada, yada. If you don't know your Watergate history, go read All the President's Men by Woodward and Bernstein. Enough said. Movie's pretty good too. Movie's pretty jamming too. But the thing is that this secret server is going to be this impeachment's Watergate tapes, because the Democrats are going to, of course, be wanting the. I think it would probably be the head of the Department of Homeland Security, who I think we have an acting DHS head right now. I think that's one of the like 30 different offices in the executive branch that are currently unfilled by permanent appointees right now. But that is going to be something the Democrats are going to be turning to whoever is the acting director at the time and saying, hey, you guys need to go through this server, have your top cleared secure guys go through the server and pull everything that shouldn't be there. And here's a subpoena for the contents of everything that shouldn't be there. And the administration is going to fight that all fucking hell. I'll tell you one thing right now. Trump does not want that to go to the Supreme Court. Because Chief Justice Roberts, I believe once there was a question somebody posed to him, what decision do you support that Republicans might hate you for? And he said his most admired decision was the decision by the Supreme Court to order Nixon to hand over the tapes to the Congress. So he's on the side of judicial independence on that one. So that's not a slam dunk for Trump, even if it goes to his somewhat stacked Supreme Court. Oh, and also the abortion case that's going in front of the Supreme Court, watch Roberts. I predict that he is going to vote to uphold Roe v. Wade, because he knows that overturning Roe v. Wade would destroy what's left of his Republican Party, and he doesn't want to see it go down. So, and he also doesn't want to be the guy who made like one of the biggest wrong decisions of any court ever that will be overturned the next time the ideology flips the other way. You know what I mean? So he's very conscious of history. So I think he's going to vote to uphold Roe v. Wade, but that's kind of a sidebar. He's a little bit of a wild card, because he is somebody who believes in absolute judicial independence. And if he feels like Trump is trying to pressure the Supreme Court in any way at all, and you know Trump, he's going to try every fucking way he can. But if Roberts thinks that he's doing that, he's going to have this knee-jerk reaction to assert their independence. So,
I have to tell you about Roberts. And I will say, I am that much of a geek that I did watch his confirmation hearings. And I have to tell you, even though he is on the other ideological spectrum from me, he is the first nominee that I have ever seen go there without notes and answer dry, completely dry, without anything backing him up, smooth as velvet. He was fantastic. I said, you know what? I may not agree with him, but he is
but he's very intelligent.
He's very intelligent. He's very smart.
Right.
And I do believe that in his heart of hearts, he fucking hates Trump. That I just believe that somebody that smart would have no respect for somebody so fucking stupid.
Trump is everything that he never wanted the Republican Party to be. In many ways, John Roberts is almost in more of like a William F. Buckley mode when it comes to conservatism. And even though I very rarely ever agreed with William F. Buckley, I would never deny the fact that he was a very smart guy who researched and argued his points very competently. It's like, and it's kind of like a dying breed in the Republican Party. I mean, Mitt Romney just came out today and said he is not going to be endorsing Donald Trump for reelection. And people are like that shocking. It's like, no, the shocking thing is he's the first elected Republican to say that. But
you know what? They've already stacked it so that he won't be challenged, and that bothers me too.
Oh yeah. Oh, and that's bothering a lot of Republicans. There are actually in two of the states that they've been looking at getting rid of the Republican primaries to help Trump, there are movements right now amongst rank and file Republicans to file lawsuits about that.
Really?
Because, because the amount of work that had already been done preparing for next year's primary and general election could be construed as an ad hoc contract, a previous agreement. So, yeah.
Really?
The Republican rank and file party workers really fucking hate Trump because he will never give them any people, money, or resources to help them do their jobs. So they are not really all that beholden to them. They would much rather be running someone like, even though we fucking hate him, Mike Pence, because Mike Pence at least knows how to play the game as a traditional politician, how to make sure the right people in the party like you so that way they work really hard for you, that kind of thing. Because Trump doesn't know about that. Trump has this attitude of, oh, I'm paying people. That's why they do what I tell them. It's like, you're not paying these people that much or enough at all to put up with your bullshit. Are you kidding? Your CEOs with six-figure salaries and golden parachutes weren't paid enough to put up with your bullshit, okay, you tidy-fisted fuckmeister? I mean, Jesus Christ. I'll tell you, it's like William Weld running against Trump for the Republican nomination. That guy is putting together a real network of old money Republican donors. These are people who did not donate last cycle because they thought Jeb was too inept and nobody else was good enough. But that's who William Weld is turning to. It's like, kind of like the old Northeastern Rockefeller Republican connections. But these folks have some money. And so if any of these local Republican committees file any sort of lawsuit, you can bet he's probably going to come in there and give them some funding to make sure they can really push that case. And he'll be able to raise the money to do so.
That, you know, that whole thing, I knew that Trump was crooked, but the idea that you would intentionally put up laws to prevent a challenger, I mean, if he can do that, what else can he fucking do? I mean, really. If he's able to do that to his own party, what is he going to, you know, what more is he going to try to do to Democrats?
Well, the thing is that primaries, though, people do forget, primaries are actually a non-governmental activity. Primaries are a private affair by individual parties to choose their nominees, to give their members a chance to have a voice in choosing their nominees. And before the 1972 campaign, any primaries that they had were purely beauty contests. They were non-binding. Everybody was picked in a smoke-filled room. So, you know, some of your favorite, you know, some of our favorite people from history, like John F. Kennedy, was picked in a smoke-filled room. And you can bet his dad paid out a decent amount of money to people in bribes to help secure him that nomination. That's just the way things used to be done. Things are more transparent now. But again, these are still the affairs of private organizations. Now, the fact that they help and funding does allow there to be some regulation of these activities. But if they decide, oh, we're just not going to have a primary, it's within their rights to do that as a party. You don't have the same flexibility, of course, when it comes to general elections, because those are entirely government-run, government-funded, and government-regulated out the yin-yang. Let me tell you something. My mom used to be a poll worker locally in Summit County, Ohio, and I remember talking to some of her supervisors and them listing off the list of regulations that they had to comply with by law in their day-to-day jobs. I'm just like, holy shit.
Wow.
But, so it's a bit – and the thing about it is, though, is that you and I understand that difference, but Trump never would. So he would try. He would say, he would suggest, he will commit more crimes in broad daylight. He will do it.
Sure.
That is a given. But the fact of the matter now is that now that all of this stuff is starting to add up, and the fact of the matter is, okay, let me tell you something. There is a power that the Congress has that they have not exercised since 1936. And that is the ability of the Speaker of the House to send the Sergeant of Arms out to collect somebody who is in violation of a congressional subpoena and imprison them within the Capitol in a secure facility they have in their basement until they are ready to comply with the subpoena. Congress, by constitutional power, has the law to enforce their subpoenas with imprisonment. That is,
wow.
You know, yeah, and they haven't done this since 1936, but there are a bunch of Democratic staffers that are going through decades of case law history up to and leading up to that to figure out how exactly they can do this if they need to. They are that serious. They are outright saying, if you defy our subpoenas this time, then we are going to charge you with obstruction. They are saying that this is obstruction. They could literally start impeachment proceedings against William Barr, basis of obstruction. They could go against Mike Pompeo. They can kick out anybody in the executive branch that they want to through impeachment. And let me tell you something. If they, because the leaks are going to happen, the whistleblowers are starting to blow their whistles. Okay, the fat lady in this saga is not going to sing. She's going to blow a mean saxophone. Okay, because the whistleblowers are happening, and everybody is starting to realize. A lot of people who are these are not the political appointees. Okay, who are starting to blow the whistle. The Republicans, the faces of the party, the people in the Senate, people in the House, they are not turning yet, and they don't have to turn yet because there are thousands of lifetime employees, people who have made a career out of public service, civil servants who populate the entire executive branch up and down the line. The one whistleblower about the Ukraine call is a CIA agent. There are so many people who have sworn an oath. And everybody, let me tell you something. If you are employed as a secretary in the, in some obscure wing of the State Department, you're still sworn in on an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution. That is just part of being a executive level, executive branch level employee. And you have thousands, tens of thousands of these people who are still going to work every day for these last few years, but the rot is permeating the entire branch. People know a lot because the one mark of Trumpism is never trying to cover your tracks. A lot of the stuff that's happened has happened ham-handedly. There's been no attempts to preserve plausible deniability for anybody. As soon as the Ukraine call info came out, within days we had information that, oh, yeah, by the way, Mike Pompeo, he was in on the call. He listened into that call. And, oh, yeah,
right.
Vice President Mike Pence, he went over to the Ukraine to make sure that the president knew that he wasn't going to get what he wanted until he delivered on what he had talked to about Trump before. So Pence went over there to be fucking Trump's muscle. That's how fucked Trump is. His drag queen is his muscle. But anyway, I mean, it's just, it's cascading. And a lot of these civil servants, they know that when the when stuff like this goes down, a lot of shit rains down on a lot of people. And everybody's going to be looking at everything that they've been doing in their job and saying, is this something that could later bring charges against me? Is this as part of a criminal conspiracy? And people are going to start thinking that the line between a witness for the prosecution or a witness for the defense, that line gets very thin very quickly. And once the whistles start blowing, other people are going to think, okay, now's the time for me to come forward with what I know, so that way I'm seen as a hero and not as somebody who is just, you know, deserting a sinking ship once everybody else had gone, that kind of thing. And so that's why these things tend to cascade.
So you think there's going to be more whistleblowing?
Oh, my God. There is a whistle that's been blowing that a lot of the media has ignored, but because of all this focus on whistleblowing, they're paying more attention to it again, and that is somebody who has come forth with information that there was political pressure placed in areas of the IRS when it came to the yearly mandatory audit of the president's tax returns.
The vice president, too.
We don't know who the pressure was placed on behalf of, who placed the pressure, what the nature of that pressure was, but we do know that the accusation has been made, and the relevant congressional committees are in the process now of securing interviews with that whistleblower. And, you know, when you look at the IRS, who knows how many whistleblowers are going to come out? How many people have been pulled to do surprise audits on people who said mean things about the president, maybe somebody at the FCC is going to say, oh yeah, I got that, that if Jeff Bezos tried to buy this TV station, we were supposed to deny him his license. And that kind of thing, because again, you wouldn't put Trump past any sort of petty personal retribution on people he doesn't like. And as this stuff, it's just going to keep coming, and it's just going to become like a river. And that is where we're going to start seeing critical mass within the Republicans, who are the faces of the party, the people who haven't been a factor up until now, because of the fact that the Democrats do control the House of Representatives. The Democrats do have full subpoena authority now in the House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi has been signing off on a whole shit ton of subpoenas. Now that is going, there's no way for the Republicans to really stop this stuff from coming out. And for Republicans, this stuff couldn't be starting at a worse time, because next year is an election year. And now you've got credible challengers to Mitch McConnell. You have a credible challenger to Mitch McConnell. You've got credible challengers to a great many Republicans in the Senate who are starting to build their campaigns now. And the more stuff that comes out, if these Republicans keep staying silent, none of them are really coming forward to defend them a whole lot right now, except for Lindsey Graham. And that's just because they must have pictures of Lindsey Graham with, I don't know, a young Michael Jackson or something like that, because otherwise, I don't know why this guy would be throwing his career away like this, but he really, really is. But, you know, he's, you know, and when the only person you got defending you is the crazy uncle of the party, the confirmed bachelor, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know, it's like, that's already a sign of great weakness on Trump's position re-impeachment. The only people who are like even saying anything to defend him are people like Newt Gingrich. And, you know, anytime Newt Gingrich says anything around impeachment, people keep remembering, hey, yeah, didn't we hear that while you were like impeaching Bill Clinton for lying about an affair, you were having an affair?
Right.
And, that kind of ends that there. So really, it's only the clown show. It's the clown shoe circus that's defending Trump right now. He's not getting any of your regular talking heads coming out and really sticking their necks out for him. And it's still early. I mean, he shouldn't be hitting this point until they're getting ready to actually file the charges and send them over to the Senate. But the fact that it's happening like this now, I mean, Republicans are really in an impossible place. They are in the most impossible of positions right now because they are increasingly demographically going to be excluded more and more from the conversation in large swaths of the country. Demographic shift is still happening, folks, okay? And there's not as many Republican senators who can depend on their seats being as safe as Republican members of the House did. Because remember, the Republicans in the House, they had gerrymandering to help them. And, oh, yeah, they lost power anyway. That's the power of wave elections. We had one in 2018. It's even bigger wave. It's sizing up for 2020. And so these Republicans who are not, you know, the ones who are up for reelection, they just know they could get swept away in a blue tsunami very, very easily if they only depend on Trump voters voting for them, because there's a lot of Trump voters who don't really like these Republicans. They don't really like Mitch McConnell, even though he's been carrying the president's water, because they've never seen them as sufficiently devoted to their great white hope's cause. And, you know, it's like if these guys go against Trump, then their own party, by and large, abandons them. If they don't go against Trump and there's a big blue wave, then there's not going to be enough moderate voters willing to swing to their side to save them. And it's coming to a point where the entire party is facing this crossroads. It's facing more like a fork in the road, the inevitable schism, because eventually there is going to be a Republican who decides to pull the trigger on, I'm abandoning Trump, I'm going to back somebody like Mike Pence or somebody like that for president. And as soon as that starts happening, then you have the racist, Trump's true base, the Klansmen, are going to, of course, abandon the mainstream Republicans because they will see them as being insufficiently dedicated to Herr Twitler. And then the whole party starts coming apart at the seams. I mean, we're really getting to the point where the parade of sleaves, the rain of sleaves that is going to be across all of the newspapers, all of the newscasts, all of everywhere, all over people's social media, that is going to make the kind of environment where Republicans will be fortunate to, you know, be able to retain some sort of a say in things by not allowing supermajorities, because when things collapse, they can collapse very, very quickly.
Yeah, but you know, you've mentioned just as an aside, you mentioned Lindsey Graham earlier, and Lindsey Graham reminds me of those old movies where the guy loses his wife and child and turns completely evil, like a movie character.
Yeah.
It's like when the minute John McCain died, everything that was ever halfway decent about Lindsey Graham went completely out the window, and he started sucking on the Trump teat. But the thing is that Lindsey Graham is currently more popular now than he's ever been since he started, you know, bending over for Trump. So that has me a little bit upset, well, a lot upset, because I cannot understand how you know, these really shitty humans get rewarded. You've got Pompeo saying he is not going to abide by the subpoenas. I only hope that Nani, in an Italian household, Nancy Pelosi is called Nani. Nani is grandma. And we trust grandma. Because, and like Trump says, she hands out subpoenas like cookies. And we keep saying, don't just give them cookies, grandma. Give them the whole fucking cake. Hurry up, you know, let's get this thing rolling. So, you know, we're just waiting to see if the American people really have the will to overthrow this bullshit government. I mean, because Pence is horrible, Trump is horrible, Kavanaugh needs to lose his job. I mean, everything this guy has done has been shit. And then you have Grandpa Munster in the form of Giuliani. What the hell is that? You haven't been appointed to shit. You're only the, you know, you're the personal lawyer of the president, and you're being sent out on official business? Who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
What
is that
about?
The minute he accepts a role that has anything to do with U.S. foreign policy, and that nullifies attorney-client privilege because he's acting outside of being an attorney at that point. So,
and that's what,
you know,
I thought was true, but they're fighting it. They're fighting it like he's got some kind of privilege.
They're going to fight it because they can, but it doesn't mean they're going to win. That's the thing. I really think with Lindsey Graham, it's probably something where, you know, Vladimir Putin gave something to Trump to hold over him, some sort of big scandal that he figures would finish him. The fact of the matter is that he's more popular within the Republican Party now because of the fact that for years people never really saw him as being a real conservative. They just thought he was somebody who was along for the ride. But now that he's willing to support a Nazi, I guess that makes him conservative enough for them. But again, when the House of Cards falls down, the entire thing falls down, because when it becomes the establishment versus the Trump wing and the inevitable schism that would lead, because then you would have the racists and the religious nut jobs who are just racist with a cross around their necks. You know, they're going to head off to another party if anything happens to Trump. I mean, the only way Trump gets removed from office is if you get 20 Republican senators to join with the Democrats. However, there are some rumors going around that there are a certain number of Republicans who have said that if it's as bad as I think it is, I'm going to vote yes for conviction, and that they're currently about 6 votes away from being able to convict. So that's the scuttlebutt
now. Because you have what we heard from Bob Corker or Jeff Flake was that there were 30, and then the other, and then Jeff Flake said, no, that's not true. It's not 30. It's 35. So, I mean, if that is the secret holdout, and this is a subjective thing, so how can we trust any of that, really? You know, Mitch McConnell I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Flake thinks he can still rehabilitate the image of the Republican Party. That's the as good as what Jeff Flake's been saying about Trump being corrupt and needing to be impeached, needing to be removed. He is still trying to preserve the idea of Trumpism as an aberration by a lunatic fringe in the party and not the party's mainstream, even though we all know that it's the party's mainstream all to hell. So it's like, he's inflating those numbers because he wants people to think that there are more that will do the right thing than not. This is more lower level whispering where nobody will ever put their name to it. But, you know, scuttlebutt is saying this senator or that senator. And it's usually the people there. It's not the people that you've seen defending or attacking Trump. It's the people who haven't said jack shit. It's the person that when you say Senator so-and-so from this state, it's like, I didn't know that that's what one of that state senators was named, you know, just someone you never hear about. Those are the names that are being circulated. But these are these are people, they're older from what I hear, and that they are people who came in to the party when George Bush Senior was president.
Right.
So they are
right.
more like George H.W. Bush Republicans, more like what I used to call your Bob Dole Republicans. You know, your guys will go out and campaign like all hell, but when they get back to Washington, then they'll work with Democrats because they know they got to get something done for their constituents, that kind of Republican.
Sure.
These are the people who
right.
have just – they voted for things that they've been told to vote a certain way on because they don't want to make waves yet, though. But they would really like is for this all to go away. They really like Trump to just resign. And there's actually been some people who have been starting to circulate proposed letters that nobody's signed yet, trying to get a confidential letter from Republican senators to Trump saying, please resign, sir, for the good of the party and your country and your
mm-hmm.
legacy, please resign. That's what they're doing right now. So they're not going to stick their necks out. But again, there is, you know, we need 20. And from the word is that there's like around 13, 14 who have said, yeah, you know what, if it's as bad as I think it is. And that's before we heard about William Barr doing his tour around the world trying to help the Trump
sure.
reelection effort, which is another impeachable offense for both of them. That's even before that. You know, the thing is, if it's as bad as I think it's going to be, then yeah, I'm going to vote yes. So you never know. There could be people who are going to think we're going to rescue our party and we're going to get rid of this guy. And you never know. And the thing is that it's going to be hard for them, though, because originally they thought that they would be able to go to their colleagues and say, listen, I got to vote to convict this guy. You can do it, too, because then we get our old colleague, Mike Pence, back. You know, it's like then we get him as president, and he'll at least be competent. He'll at least know how to sign his name without being reminded what his middle initial is. You know, it's like it'll be a return to normalcy, guys. But the thing is, Trump has made it clear. I think Trump knows that these guys are thinking like that, too. And he's made it clear if he goes down, Mike Pence is going with him because he is going to he has involved Mike Pence in everything.
Yes.
He is absolutely involved. Richard Nixon didn't involve Spiro Agnew with jack shit. Okay. And he was glad
right.
of that when Agnew
right.
wound up having to resign. But the
yep.
fact of the matter is when you've got a criminal administration that is basically ensuring that this is the difference between, you know, past Republican administrations and the Trump administration. The Trump administration is trying to organize the executive branch like a mafia family, and where Donald is the capo, he's the Don. And they're trying to ensure absolute loyalty. That's why they have so many unfilled positions. They haven't found people loyal enough, unquestionably loyal enough, so loyal that they
mm-hmm.
will commit felonies and go to jail loyal enough to fill those roles.
Right.
And so by ordering Mike Pence around to do these things on behalf of the U.S. government and the Trump-Pence reelection campaign, he's made sure that Pence mm-hmm. is up to his fucking eyeballs in it. And you know what? I have a feeling Pence has been up to his eyeballs for far longer than a lot of us suspect, because do you remember who it was who basically pushed Mike Pence on the Trump ticket?
No.
You don't remember that? There's a little guy named Paul Manafort. That's when Paul Manafort was running the Trump campaign.
Right. Let me tell you what. There's been so many of these fucking idiots. It's hard for me to – I forgot about Mike
yeah.
Flynn. I forgot about Paul Manafort. I forgot about Corey Lewandowski. I forgot about
Michael
George Papadopoulos. I have forgotten about half of the cast characters because there has been a nonstop clown car full of these fucking idiots. It's hard. I need a scorecard, Taliesin. I can't keep up anymore.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's just – now, actually, I was starting to have somebody – so many names running through my head, and my cookies are just starting to kick in tonight. Who was I just talking about?
We were talking about Pence and Paul Manafort.
Oh, yeah, Pence about Paul Manafort. Yeah, the resident of the guest of the federal penitentiary system, Paul Manafort.
Yep.
Paul Manafort is the guy who selected Mike Pence. Paul Manafort is the guy who pushed Mike Pence on the entire Trump team. until they pretty much capitulated. Donald Trump wanted to pick Rudy Giuliani.
That makes sense.
Oh, my God.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but Giuliani didn't want it. And then Manafort kept pushing Mike Pence and saying, hey, this will help shore you up with both the religious conservatives, because Mike Pence is, you know, Handmaiden's Tale level fanatical. And also with the Republican establishment, because Mike Pence, as much of a psychotic lunatic as I think his entire ideology is, I will admit that he is a very, very well-honed to spread favors around the party to make people not beholden to him, but just thinking, hey, what a great guy. Man, you know, I was having this re-election campaign. He sent a couple of staffers over to help me. It was great. And he had, you know, and Mike Pence was able to grease the wheels for Trump with a lot of the traditional party apparatchiks, because he had already been spending years ingratiating himself with them, thinking about his own presidential run until his career in Indiana crashed and burned. But he was able to use all that. So, you know, it was actually not a bad call by Manafort. But the thing is that anything that Manafort touched gets dirty. It's just the nature of it, because the guy was dirty. The guy was up to his fucking armpits in dirty dealings for his entire career. And so apropos that, once again, we get taken back to Ukraine, the Ukraine, where Paul Manafort made a lot of money getting a pro-Putin wannabe dictator elected president of that country. And, you know, that's where he did a lot of the things that he's spending time in jail on, because he was incredibly corrupt and he got a lot of dirty money and he didn't pay taxes on that dirty money. So, of course, that's what he's in prison for mainly. But the thing is, is that still, you know, and oh, by the way, you know, don't forget that the communications director for Bernie's campaign, Tad Devine, he was also in that Ukraine job.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to sound paranoid, but has anybody seen, has Ted Devine defected to Russia yet? Because, you know, a couple of cardiac events this close together sounds kind of suspicious if you ask the person with the tinfoil hat down at the end of the cappuccino bar. But anyway, but he was involved in that campaign. But, you know, Manafort was into it up to his eyeballs, and we keep going back to Ukraine. And now the scandal that's triggered impeachment, Ukraine. Yeah, and there's, so it's kind of funny the way these things go full circle so many times. But, you know, and again, you know, just like the Watergate break-in, the Watergate burglars was a petty crime that led to the disclosing of a whole bunch of things. And so, too, this one phone call to Zelensky was, you know, was still a crime, but not as big as the crimes that they're unearthing. So it's like,
because it's not the crime, it's the cover up.
and actually, it's not just this. It's not just the crime. It's the fact that this crime is one of 10,000 crimes, and if you start looking underneath one, you're going to find five more. I mean, that's why, as much as I love Kamala Harris and I would love to see her as president, I think the nation needs Kamala to be attorney general in the next administration, because the next AG is going to have a big job on her hands cleaning up this mess. And, you know, of course, it's going to be yet another, another incident where a bunch of white guys fuck everything up, and who gets called in to clean it up? An intelligent black woman. But anyway, it's like, oh my God, it's again that cycle, you know. It's like Republicans fuck things up, Democrats come in and fix things, and Republicans fuck things up again. But, you know, I think we need Kamala in the Attorney General's office, because we need someone who is just going to go after with so much gusto. that kind of thing. Somebody suggested Hillary for attorney general. She was never a prosecutor. You needed a prosecutor to root out the entrenched roots of a criminal enterprise. I think we need to save Hillary for the next Supreme Court vacancy. That way, the rest, you know, anybody whose heads didn't explode by President Elizabeth Warren, their veins will pop when they see Supreme Court Justice Hillary Rodham Clinton.
I actually thought Barack Obama would make a great Supreme Court justice, but that's me.
Actually, you never know.
In addition to, you never know.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, you first.
I was just going to say there is a precedent of future presidents asking past presidents to help play a role in diplomacy. It could be really good. You know, you never know. President Warren may wind up calling on Barack Obama to serve a term as Secretary of State.
Oh, that'd be awesome if he'd want to do it, though. That's a lot of time away from home.
I know. But, you know, I don't think he would be able to resist the call of his country. I think he'd be like, okay, I'm only going to do it for 4 years and I'm done, but I will come back and do this service. Because he's been there. He had to go around the world and mend all the fences that were broken by the Bush-Cheney administration. And, man, remember when we thought those guys fucked up foreign relations? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. But, see, I think Barack would rightfully still be pissed at the country as a whole for putting in Trump after him. It's like an insult. We weren't ready for a really good president. So the pendulum had to swing all the way in the opposite direction from having a really great person to having the shittiest person we could fucking find. It's unbelievable.
Oh, let me tell you, the Trump election was the result of the convergence of two things that were really things that had never happened before in the American electoral history, especially the presidency. And that is that you had an unprecedented amount of direct interference by a hostile foreign adversary. I mean, the Russians have been trying to interfere in American elections for years. They first the first time they launched a program to interfere in an American election, they wanted to prevent the reelection of Ronald Reagan. They tried doing things to spread rumors and propaganda, and they tried to turn the country against Reagan, but they didn't really know what they were doing. They really didn't have a way into the American mainstream. They mainly tried to start floating stories through conspiracy theory newsletters back when people used to type those up and photocopy them and mail them around. If you've ever heard a story about the AIDS virus being genetically engineered by the CIA, that is something that came out of 80s Russian propaganda. Okay, so that's the kind of stuff that they were doing for a long time. But technology has allowed them to have unprecedented ability to fuck with another country's systems, especially as we put more and more of our electoral, our government systems online, and the electoral systems have never had the security that they've really warranted. And the decentralized nature of American democracy, the fact you don't have one election for president that can be safeguarded from attack, you have 50 elections for president that all have to have their own software systems, their own organizational systems, and all have their own unique challenges in trying to defend them from outside attack. And also with the spread of social media and Russian, very successful Russian propaganda campaigns to turn the public against the candidate they didn't want, Hillary Clinton, and towards the candidate that they did want, Donald Trump. That you had that on one side. But the other thread that led to this was the reaction against a black man getting elected, not only to presidency once, but getting reelected, two straight terms. Mm-hmm. The older white Americans, and I'm talking, it's like even some of the older Gen X's, I'll include some of my own people in here, those people started feeling this almost reflexive threat to their white privilege that many of them didn't even know they had growing up. And now that everybody's told them
yep.
what it is and how it's benefited from them, they're afraid of losing it. And that kind of reaction as a backlash against that sort of thing. And either one of those things may not have been enough to bring in someone like Trump. One of those things, like just the backlash against a black president, could swing it to the opposite party as a way of punishing the party that had the black president. But the unique features that led to it being Trump was the convergence of the backlash plus the Russian influence campaign. And those came together and produced President Donald J. Trump. And, you know, so I really, you know, it's one of those things where if one thing had been different, everything could have been different. There are so many points where it easily could have been swung the other way. It's just, you know, with the history of all this stuff. But the thing is that this is the death throes of the old order. And it's hard to say that when you say, well, the old order seems to be winning right now. But that's the thing. It's like the resurgence winds up destroying itself because you already have Republicans who are like, oh, my God, kids in cages. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
We always hear about the heartless ones who are like, you know, making fun of it and putting it on T-shirts and all that. But there's also a lot. I've run into people personally who are like, I thought I could give this guy a chance, but then this happened, you know, or I thought
right.
that it was just the regular he said, she said on this, this and this. But then this happened. And then for a lot, especially older ladies, what I saw was, you know, kids in fucking cages. I just can't. And so the resurgence of that order is it's exposing the rot at the core. And it's like the people who are insulated from that rot before, now that they've, you know, thrown themselves back into control to a certain extent, there's no way you can avoid it now because it permeates everything. I mean, literally everything. American evangelical Christianity, a lot of it is race. It's not about, it's not even about gays. A lot of it's just about race. And that's how a lot of this shit started, okay, was white Southerners trying to find ways to put their kids into private Christian schools that they could keep segregated, that kind of thing. And so it's just, you know, you're getting people, you know, it's like I'm wondering behind the scenes. See, all of my sources are all on the left. I really wish I had cultivated a few sources on the right because I'm just wondering this is like we're coming to the days of the American conservatives movement. This is like, you know, way after the party should have ended and there are just some people still hanging out. But it's like you got to wonder how many people involved behind the scenes are making plans to try to resurrect the Republican Party after Trump and how many are starting to look at plans to raise a new party in the ashes of the old. I'm just starting to wonder where people are going to start coming down on this. And where they decide to come down on this will really dictate what they do in the next 9 months. Because we're in the early days of impeachment, folks, okay? I mean, we could be looking at 9 months before everything is resolved. So, and at that point, it's going to be in the thick of the presidential campaign. And so the Republicans are going to go into the next election with a 9-month review of the crimes of the administration that bears their name. Have fun, guys.
Well, you know, and before I forget, because there are, you know, I don't like to do the, you know, I like to give a fair shot to all of the information. So I wanted to ask you about whether or not there's any credibility to what they are saying about, I guess, specifically Hunter Biden. What is the situation that they are talking about when they say that, you know, oh, Joe and his son committed a crime? What possible crime. I mean, I understand the kid worked for a Ukrainian gas company, but how does that automatically make you guilty, or does it? Is it just more smoke and mirrors? What actually happened?
First, let me tell you the story that Republicans want you to believe, and then I'll tell you the truth. The story that Republicans want you to believe is that, one thing I can say that is absolutely accurate is that the oil and gas industry in all of Eastern Europe is filled with a lot of organized crime ties, a lot of corruption. It's all over the fucking place, okay? A lot of Russian mob is trying to move into nationalized oil systems and privatize them. And it's a big – there's a lot of shit going on with that. But basically, the Republican charge is that Hunter Biden was involved with some of this corruption at this gas company, and that Joe Biden went over while he was vice president and said, hey, listen, can you lay off my son? Now, that's what Republicans want you to believe. Here, this is now the truth. There are things at that company that Hunter Biden has worked for that are under investigation because there's always going to be an investigation. It's the only way that they can try to keep a cap on corruption coming into the system. But Hunter Biden really wasn't involved in it. It wasn't part of his department, that the stuff that's being looked at. And when Joe Biden went over to the Ukraine – the thing that he delivered to them absolutely was a demand that they investigate this matter fully without any regard as to the family ties of anyone involved under scrutiny of the investigation. That is what happened. And as a matter of fact, it was a strong message of anti-corruption that Joe was there to deliver. It was language that was developed by Democrats and Republicans in a bipartisan manner a few years before. And everybody in Ukraine was connected with it. And it says, yeah, that's what happened. Joe came over and said, hey, finish this probe. I don't care where it goes, you know. I guess there's an apocryphal story of somebody saying, well, what if it leads to your son? And he's like, well, I'd like to think I raised him better than that, but he's a grown up. He can handle the fallout of his own actions. So it was just, pretty much one of those things where it's one of those things you have to do because so many people assume that there's going to be some kind of favor cut, especially when you consider how dependent Ukraine is on American military aid, which is what Trump was using to manipulate them. Always going to be charges of quid pro quo and deals being made and that sort of thing. So this is one of those trips that you kind of got to do these days just to make sure that it's on the record that you said the opposite, that you said, pursue this wherever it goes. So absolutely everybody, even a lot of Republicans in private are saying, yeah, that's really – it's inescapable that that's what the situation is. But that doesn't matter to Don and Rudy. And that's the thing, too. It's getting to the point where even, again, on Fox News, they are saying that, no, this is – this is not what happened. What Rudy Giuliani is saying happened did not happen. This is the other thing. This is what happened. Because it's all on the record. There is no denying it. It's just one of those situations
even
where people
Tucker
are like
Carlson.
Even
Tucker Carlson
yeah.
was like, no, there's this, it's, this is ridiculous. This didn't happen. And it kind of shocked me because the last few days, I've noticed that a few of the members of the Fox team are kind of like, wait a minute, this is too far gone even for whoever that specific, like a Chris Wallace or, Geraldo is still behind Trump 100% because he's a fucking moron too. But, it's just some of the more vitriolic, like a Tucker Carlson is like, I may not find this an impeachable offense, but this isn't right.
Yeah.
What he did is not cool and it's not allowable and it's inappropriate. I mean, any kind of calling out by Fox, to me, is like a major friggin' victory these days because
if you've lost Tucker Carlson and you're a Republican, you're fucked. Okay, that's pretty much, it's like you're done, okay? And you know what? Yeah. You still know what the number one watched morning news program amongst people who work in Washington is. It's Morning Joe. Yeah,
of course it is.
It's Morning Joe, and
they are just
nonstop. They are just straightforward, nonstop in beating this drum of these people are crazy. This guy's crazy. He's dangerous. You know, it's like they're openly theorizing on possibly early stage dementia. So, and when you hear Morning Joe talking about you like that, it's just like, oh my God, again, you're fucked.
Well, because hearing it come from a former conservative, you know, this is one of the reasons why I'm such a huge Nicole Wallace fan, because she, you know, she worked in the Bush White House, Junior.
Oh, yeah.
And she, you know, she was there for the whole Sarah Palin fiasco. And, you know, she realized the error of her ways after a fashion, and Trump was just way beyond the pale for her. You know, for normal conservatives, this is just a bridge too fucking far. And the true believers are these religious fundies who are insane.
Yeah.
But normal Republicans, and I will tell you, the one thing that Trump did was he made me see that not all Republicans were evil. And that's the fact of it. But I'm a huge Nicole Wallace fan. What do you think?
Did you see the video of Nicole Wallace when they cut away from a live Trump event where she said, we are going to break with the president's remarks right now because he's not telling you the truth. And then they went and fact-checked everything he said to that point and said that they were not going to carry any more of it because they just don't feel like they want to put everybody through the inevitable fact-check that would take five times as long as the speech. So,
exactly.
And that was Nicole Wallace who did that.
Right. I know, and I think more people should actually follow suit. If you continue to give air to this bullshit, you know, it's like goo. Something is going to stick, even a little bit residually, which is why, you know, I think the more that we can get Republicans, normal Republicans, to actually speak out and say something. The Republicans saved us in the time of Nixon at Watergate. That's what it took. Your own party has to go back and say, you know what, this has been a huge mistake and judgment on our part, and we need to make it up to the American people. Of course, there's a faction of true believers with any administration, and Nixon had his true believers too. But this is just so dangerous on a daily basis, what this man says and does. And he thinks because he says something in public that it's no longer illegal because he's the president. I mean, that line of thinking I find terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just the thing is, too, is that, again, we are kind of fortunate as a nation that when we had somebody who was this megalomaniacal, this just, you know, so prone to fascism, actually in the executive office, they wind up being so wildly incompetent that they still can only achieve a fraction of the amount of evil that they could have otherwise. And now we're finding out that what little he did use of the executive branch apparatus was used for these petty political scores that he's trying to settle that are all impeachable offenses. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's like 30 different jobs. And we're talking things like, we don't have a Secretary of Defense right now. We have an acting Secretary of Defense. We have an acting head of the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, literally, the reorganization of the government when the Department of Homeland Security was created was so total that, I mean, she from being.
Talison, it seems like we have lost our guest. Talison. Well, hopefully he's going to call back in momentarily. But, yeah, I mean, if you've been listening, we're talking about what's going on with the president, of course, because that's what we constantly do on the politics night. But it is a frightening thing. You know, there's a whole lot of attempt to normalize what he does on a daily basis, and it's a scary thing. Anyway, all right, it looks like we have lost Allison for the evening, so I am going to wrap it up for this evening. Please join me and my sister next week. We are back on. And everyone have a wonderful weekend. Brightest blessings to all of you. Have a great night, everybody.